welcome back to another episode of Questions with Crocker with me, Dr. Crocker, and my husband, Shane.
Who's not a veterinarian.
He is not a veterinarian. I'm an emergency veterinarian, and together, wow, it's early in the morning, I'm already stuttering. Together, we own a veterinary hospital in Fort Worth, Texas area, and you do a couple other things.
Yes.
How many businesses do you run slash consult in slash help with?
I don't know.
I would say four, at least.
Probably.
Yeah. But it gives you the luxury of working from home.
Yes.
Working on the golf course.
Yeah.
All those things. It is early in the morning. We usually podcast late at night because I would say we are definitely not morning people.
No.
You're rubbing your face right now. And neither of us slept great last night. So, yeah, it's going to be good. I have my coffee. So I'll just sip on that for a minute while you tell me how things are going with you.
I'm just
going
to sit here in silence.
You can't do that. It's a podcast. It's awkward.
I can watch this on YouTube and just see me sitting here in silence.
So that is a good point. You can actually watch us on YouTube, and you can listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy the show, make sure you send us questions. We answer anything about our lives, about veterinary medicine, about owning a hospital. And sometimes we just talk about random stuff that people want to know about. We are not experts in this field. I have been a veterinarian for 14 years now, and you have been an entrepreneur for
my entire life.
What does that mean? Like, were you the kid with like the lemonade stand when you were younger, or
I was always selling something?
You were always selling something. What was some deal that you had in school? Like, did you go get kids at school to pay you to do something, or was it like doing stuff for adults and making money?
I don't remember. I remember selling baseball cards. Pretty early, like the county fair, set up a little booth, selling baseball cards.
I could see that. Our daughter was going over her Christmas list, and on it was a Green Line card. And she's 11, for anyone who doesn't follow us. And I thought that was interesting. No clue what that was. Back in my day, when you got an allowance or you did something, you got paid like 25 cents, right? You had your piggy bank and you just kept everything in there. Well, now apparently you can give your kid essentially a credit card, and you can set up on your phone to give them payment and allowance, you know, weekly, that'll automatically deposit in there. Or if they do something for you, you can pay them for like a chore, and you can set up chores in there that they can go in and do and get paid for. And I just think that's wild. What is your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's the same as giving them like a their own checking account with a debit card.
It is, except for the whole like virtual allowance chore situation, which honestly is kind of genius because then you don't have to think about it. But we don't do an allowance for our children.
No.
Did you get an allowance growing up?
I don't think so.
I didn't get an allowance. What I got was...
Maybe I did. I don't remember.
I got paid for grades. Mm-hmm. So I got so much money for an A, so much for a B, and nothing for a C. C's were not rewarded in the Mayu household.
We definitely got paid for grades. We worked. Like, I had a job.
What was your job growing
up? Working around the family business.
Okay. And what was the family business?
Well, both my parents owned their own business. My grandparents owned their own business, so... Whoever decided to work for.
I remember, so when we started dating, we were talking about just different things. And I remember your mom was a florist and owned a flower shop. And you basically told me this story of how you have like PTSD from Valentine's Day.
It was hell week. Not just day, that was like hell week.
From having to like put together so many things, from like the rose stripping where you had to take the thorns off, and then deliveries. And so you basically use your PTSD from childhood as an excuse of why you don't really buy flowers that often for the person you're dating, which good thing for you. I'm not a big flower person. I like more plants that are going to live a while. But I just remember I was like, either this guy is really smooth because he's telling me the story and I'm actually like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Or he's just like a master storyteller.
Whatever it takes to get out of buying gifts.
That was pretty funny. You are good at gifts, though. And speaking of that, we are heading into Christmas, and you're really hard to buy gifts for.
I don't think I am.
Okay, tell me one thing right now that I could buy you for Christmas.
New golf shoes.
It's always something golf related. I feel like I buy that every single year. I guess you golf enough that you do need new stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Now you know what you're getting for Christmas because you've given me zero other ideas.
I'll be surprised.
I give you ideas. Like, I just drop like ideas, like little tidbits. Like I told you something last night. Do you remember?
No. I don't want to drop that again.
Maybe I should write out a list. I was reading, remember, and it was really dark and I couldn't see well.
I know what you wanted.
Oh, okay. You're just messing with me?
Yes.
All right. Well, I am interested and also, I guess, a little nervous to talk about the question that we have today. The premise of the podcast is you send in questions and we share our stories or we share our opinions on something. And this is something that for some reason, sometimes I get really emotional talking about, which irritates me because I would say in general, I am not super emotional about your faces now. I would say I'm
not for shock value.
I would say I'm not a big like crier, like a big emotional crier. So this is something that sometimes will cause that. So we are going to get into something that was a part of my career. And one of my favorite creators on social media, if you don't follow her, you should, at Deaf Dogged Her. She's a vet student and she is deaf. And so she talks a lot about accessibility and things that you could do on social media and as a practice and in school to like help out students that are hearing disabled. And so she's a great person to follow. But she wanted to know, why did I decide to transition from equine medicine to small animal? So any of you who have not followed my story before, I decided I was going to be a veterinarian when I was like 5, 6 years old, and I was going to be an equine vet. So I was going to work on horses. I grew up riding and showing horses, very comfortable with them, and they just had my heart. Like I understood them as an animal, and I felt connected to them, and I wanted to help them and help their owners. So my goal in vet school was to be a horse vet. And I did that. I tracked equine. I, you know, was the president of the equine practitioner club. I did everything I could, research projects, extra things, just to get as much horse experience as possible. Graduated, did an internship out in California, which I really enjoyed. And then I practiced back here in Texas at equine ambulatory practice for, I think, 3 years. And I was the first woman to join a practice of all men. They did racetrack and regular mobile practice. And I absolutely loved it. I would say that I would still be an equine vet today if circumstances and life stages hadn't happened and changed. Even though I really like what I do today, both things can be true, right? Like I can really love what I did as an equine vet, but also love what I do now as an emergency vet and a hospital owner. So I did eventually leave equine medicine and went into small animal. And I would say there was a variety of reasons. There wasn't just one thing. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Do you remember what it was like when I was working equine medicine? Like, what was your perspective on that time period?
Yeah, I remember it very well. I mean, there's a lot of on calls, a lot of late nights, a lot of driving, a lot of, you know, showing up at late nights for a colicking horse. I remember thinking, and again, not being a veterinarian or being part of vet med at all, thinking that equine veterinarians seemed to me much more labor intensive than I would picture any kind of doctor to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like physically.
Yeah, it was just, to me, it just looked physically exhausting. It looked like it was going to be a short-lived career because of potential injuries, because of, you know, hurting yourself by lifting legs, whatever it is. You know, to me, it seemed like very physical, very technical, and less using your knowledge. That's how it came across. I know that's not the case, but.
No, I mean, I think especially when you're working, that's a good point, mobile equine practice, you're limited in like what you have available for diagnostics, for treatment. And honestly, that's one of the things I liked about it. I liked like going out to someone's house and having a problem and having to like figure it out and sometimes kind of MacGyver it a little bit because I didn't have everything like readily available for me, which I think makes me a good emergency vet now too, right? It's just that desire to like figure things out and maybe not have all the information or everything I need to get that done sometimes. But I think that physically, yes. I mean, working in Texas in 110 degree weather, out in a truck, out at people's farms, you know, floating multiple horses' teeth and doing a lot definitely wears on your body. I will say I was probably in the best shape that I've ever been in when I was doing that job. And I did work, I worked 60 to 80 hour weeks and I was on call 50% of the time. So in our practice, some of the doctors that were older didn't take call. Only a couple of us did. And so I was on call 50% of the time. And people think I'm crazy when I say this, but like, I really did love and enjoy it. Not everyone is made to work those hours and made to be on call like that. But I, for the most part, really did enjoy it. And part of that was we didn't have kids. You could jump in the truck with me sometimes. And I liked meeting the new clients and just, I don't know, using all those skills and things I had learned in school. So I didn't leave equine medicine because I didn't love equine medicine and because I didn't love the patients or the clients. That had nothing to do with it. It really was a combination of things. So one of the first things was a really common reason, which is I got pregnant with our first child, my daughter Izzy, and I worked up until like 42 weeks until I had her, basically. My doctor said, you can keep doing everything you've been doing. And I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember when we went out and I was 35 plus weeks pregnant and we went out to see that horse that was cut in the middle of Fort Worth? And it was a back leg cut, which is already like a really hard thing to deal with because if you touch it, you try to mess with it. And it was a yearling who wasn't completely broke. Like you can get kicked really easily. And I went into that situation and I had been doing it for a couple years, not even thinking about the fact that I could get hurt. Like I was super pregnant. I was working on a yearling, the back leg. The horse did not want me messing with it, kept trying to kick me. I was giving sedatives, eventually had to lay it down completely so I could like get done what I needed to get done. And he was kind of wobbling because of the drugs I'd given him and things like that. And you were like helping me and holding lights and doing stuff. And I remember we got back in the truck and you don't get mad at me that often. You were like kind of mad. And I don't know if you remember this conversation.
Oh, yeah. I remember the conversation.
Okay. So then what did you say to me? Why were you so mad at me?
I think I was the most mad because I think you thought you could continue to do what you've been doing up until that point, but your reflexes and stuff just aren't the same when you're pregnant. I mean, you're a little bit slower moving, yeah. You know, A, and then B, you're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting an unborn child as well. Yeah. So I think those two factors are probably what kind of pushed me over the edge.
Yeah. For me, it really was a complete like lack of awareness, really, because I'd been doing it for so long. But you were right. I wasn't good at asking for help. I wasn't good at like limiting myself because part of it was I was a woman, an equine practitioner, and I would show up to places and people would be like, oh, I usually see Doc or I usually see like one of the guys. So it was like an effort to prove that I could still do it, even though I was pregnant, even though I was a woman. But also, I did have an overinflated sense and confidence that like I wouldn't get hurt. And I've heard so many veterinarians, my own intern mate from equine, she broke her femur her first year after our internship, a horse fell on her. So it really was dumb of me to do that. And as soon as you said it, it really kind of hit me all of a sudden like, oh, I need to maybe change some things or adapt a little bit. And I didn't really want to, I felt like it was weak to admit that, I guess.
I was going to say, I think even just outside of being pregnant, again, back to the physical part of equine medicine, especially ambulatory, it just seems so, I don't know, archaic or I don't know. There's something about it just doesn't seem like somebody that would go, you know, to undergrad and become a doctor and go do that type of work.
Well, I do think that the mentality used to be very much like, we'll get it done with like brute strength, like we'll put a twitch on them, we'll hold them, we'll like fight the horse to get it done. And there was a big shift that was occurring. And I was part of this of saying like, I'm not going to fight this horse. I'm going to sedate this horse, right? Or this is not safe. Let's readjust where the horse is and what we can do. So I do think in the past, it was a little more like cowboy, like let's get it done. And there's a pride and like, you know, cowboying it out. And then it started to be like, let's work a little smarter and not harder. But I agree. It still is definitely not the level of like medicine I practice now being like an emergency veterinarian or even that I started to practice in small animal. So I really did love the job. I really physically could do it. It was harder when I was pregnant, but I had no desire to leave equine practice. what happened was I had my baby. I took 8 weeks unpaid maternity leave. And then you also had a job change in that time period where you got a big promotion, but you were traveling, I would say 3 days a week or so.
Yeah.
You were all of a sudden traveling a ton. And that continued through like the first couple months of our daughter being born. So all of a sudden I was working 60 hours a week. I was on call 50% of the time. I had a newborn at home and you were traveling more. And we had a lot of support. Like, I'm not going to lie, we are lucky. We live close to family and that's intentional. And I had a lot of support from, you know, my parents, from my sister, from people who could kind of help and be there. But when it was the middle of the night and I hadn't, you know, slept much and I knew I had to be up for work the next morning and I wasn't sleeping all night because my baby was crying, there was no one else there. Like, that got to be very physically and emotionally wearing. I still, though, wasn't ready to admit that I needed to make a change because I loved doing equine medicine. So a lot of people will say this, that if they're kind of going, and I was the person that was like, I'm going to just work harder. If I just work harder and push myself more, like, I'll work through it eventually, right? Like, it'll work itself out. I just need to keep pushing. If I just keep going and pushing, and I've always been that way. And I would say that's not a healthy way to be.
No.
Like, I don't want to encourage people to be like that. Because you will hit your wall and you will hit your breaking point at some point, and you don't know when that's going to be. So I have told this story before, but I think it's important to continue to share. But my kind of breaking point was you were traveling, you were out of town, and I was on call, and I got a colic call in the middle of the night, and I woke up Izzy and put her in the car seat. Luckily, she slept great in the car seat, so she went back to sleep, and I think she was only about 12 weeks old. Put her in the car, drove out to see the colic, saw the horse. Realized it was just a basic impaction. I needed to oil the horse, give it some water, electrolytes. So basically give it a mild sedative, pass a tube on it down into its stomach to give it a couple things. So this is a process that you do hundreds of times when you're an equine vet. I could do it in my sleep, basically. But what I would do when I had to take Izzy on emergencies is I would put my phone in the car and I would turn it on, and then I would have the client call me and turn their phone on, and we could hear her because it was cold and I didn't want to like leave the car, you know, not running and the windows down or anything, and she was sleeping in there. So I remember I'm in the middle of tubing and I'm at the point when like I really need to make sure like the tube goes in the right place, goes in the, you know, esophagus and not into the lungs because that would kill the horse. And all of a sudden I hear her start crying. And at first it's just like little cries and I'm like, okay, and I'm almost there. And I keep, and the client's kind of looking at me and I'm just like doing my job. And then the cries turn into like the screams that you don't want to hear when you're a parent. And that, like, the weird thing was, and I remember it was almost an out of body experience, but my head was telling me like, you're a doctor, you're a veterinarian. This horse needs you to finish this job. You're in the middle of it. You can't just stop. Just get it done. Like, just do what you need to do. Like, logically, that's what was happening. But my entire body responded to the fact that my kid was crying. I was nursing at the time, immediately could feel that like my body was like, whew, you need to go to your baby. I start like sweating a little bit thinking about it. My heart rate sped up. Like, there are just some physiologic things that happen when you have a child. And in that moment, I felt like so, I don't know that I can even explain it. I just felt like I wish I could be in two places at once because I love this and this is so important to me, but I like love her more. Sorry. And my client was so sweet and they're like, do you want me to get her? And so I was like at a point that they could walk away and they went and grabbed the car seat and got her out. But I had to finish doing what I was doing. So I'm, you know, pumping the things into the horse and I'm watching them like try to comfort her and she just wants her mom. And the thing is, like, she'll never know that happened, you know? But that was, like, the moment that I was like, something has to change. Like, I really can't do it all in this moment. I can't be everything that I want to be, you know, in this job that I'm doing and be there for her right now.
Yeah. So I think that's specific to that job, right? So if this story were to progress, we talk about trying to make changes within that company to come up with a solution that would work. But at the time, they weren't willing to make those changes, right?
No.
So I think you could have potentially still practiced veterinary medicine on horses going forward in a different situation specific to this company, or with potentially a different type of practice, right? Now, with that being said, in the area that we're in, where we chose to be, all the equine and horses were moving further north and west of where we were. So to get to a actual equine hospital, if you want to work in an equine hospital, we would have had to move away.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to stay ambulatory, the problem was the drives are going to be longer, the nights are going to be longer because the horses are moving further and further away. And without having the right scenario where you didn't have to call as much or had more assistance in the truck with you, you know, or me giving up, you know, working.
I was going to say if I had a partner that was more, you know, able to be home, but that was just the reality of our situation at that moment. And I think that was the hard thing for me, was that the reality of the situation wasn't ultimately what I wanted and what I had like worked so hard for. The idea of me not being an equine vet anymore meant that I had done all that work, all that school, worked so hard in my internship to just like fail in my mind and give it up. And it took me years to kind of process that it wasn't me failing. It wasn't me giving up. It was me realizing that I was at a life stage where I just couldn't sustain what was expected of me in that practice. And I didn't just quit. Like, we had a lot of conversations and I didn't just say like, that's it, I'm leaving. I went to them and I said, hey, I love this job. I love what I'm doing. I think I'm pretty good at it, but I can't be on call 50% of the time. I can't work 60-hour weeks. I need like a little bit of a change right now to make this sustainable. And they said, no, we hired you to do this and you need to do it. And I don't know that they expected me to say, okay, well, I'm giving you a month's notice, because that's what I did. And I, since, you know, we still know them and we've talked about it, and they say, like, looking back, we wish we had been able to make it work with you, and we had been able to understand that it wasn't going to be a long-term change, and, you know, like, we needed to change things anyways. But I don't tell this story to make people not want to go into equine medicine.
And that's where I was going with my statement. It's not that it can't be done, right? It wasn't a good fit for us, especially at the time. And I think that, you know, other things happen the way they're supposed to happen. You know, I think if you look at where your career has progressed to, you wouldn't have been able to do all that had you still been in equine medicine.
No, I agree. I mean,
just a different field.
If I had been in equine medicine still, I would be a part of the group. There's actually a large group of equine practitioners now that are talking about sustainability. They have a conference about it, and they're really focused on trying to make it a career that people can stay in as a veterinarian. And there's a lot that goes into that. But I think that one of the big takeaways I want people to understand is you can absolutely love something and just not be the right decision for you at that time and for your family and for whatever else you have going on, your mental health, right? Your physical health. And that, I think, is a hard thing for people to understand. It would be easier if I hated my job to walk away, but I didn't. And I do love what I do now. And I agree with you, like, things have turned out better than I could have ever imagined. But I don't want to lie and say it wasn't a process.
Oh, yeah. It was a very big decision.
It was like a mourning period for me and a little bit of a, who am I if I'm not an equine veterinarian?
But you linked up some classmates and stuff too that provide a lot of insight. And
I did. And probably one of the biggest people was my mentor at Texas A&M, Dr. Cohen. And he was someone that, you know, he's an equine vet. He's amazing in his field. And it was another person I was worried about disappointing, right? If I left equine medicine. And I called him and I talked to him and he told me, like, you're great and you've done a great job and you don't have anything to prove to anyone. And he's a huge family man. And so he definitely was like, you need to do what's right for you and your family. And, you know, full circle, I can see us at the practice we have now having like the ability to treat horses again mm-hmm. in the future. I still help some people out with their horses. It's not like I've forgotten everything that I've ever known. I still tube a horse tomorrow if I needed to, right? But it doesn't have to be that that part of my life's completely over. But at that moment, I needed to make a change for my mental health and for my family. And so it's not easy to do. It's not something that I think people shouldn't even try equine medicine because of it. But I'm pretty transparent about, you know, there was just a variety of things that made it where I really just couldn't do it anymore. So after that, this is where networking comes into play. I talk a lot about networking, but I had met a lot of veterinarians locally. One of them had a ton of miniature donkeys. Of course, miniature donkeys have colic and things all the time. So I'd go out there and I remember he'd sit in his chair and I would laugh because I'm treating the donkeys and giving him, you know, things and I'm doing things that like he could do, but he's a small animal, you know, vet. And I kept saying like, why do you have me come out? And he's like, 'cause this is what you do. And then he would ask me about how things were going and we'd talk about life. And he would say, when you leave equine practice, you call me. He's like, I can teach you, you know, small animal medicine. I can help you get your surgery skills back, but I can't teach you how to like communicate and how to like just interact with people. And like, you can already do that. So just call me. And I always kept that in the back of my mind. So literally I called him and I said, was this legitimate? Like what you said? And he said, absolutely. And I started doing relief for him. He set me up with other people. There's a much bigger story to tell, you know, around that transition and around some of the things I did to set myself up for success as a now small animal practitioner. But it taught me a lot. And it taught me that what you do in this career does not define who you are. It taught me that it's not working for you, you need to make a change.
Yeah, I mean, you have so much flexibility in this career. So much you can do. You know, even if you get to where you're like, I don't like to practice medicine, mm-hmm. well, go teach. I mean, go do research. There's so much you can do.
You can join industry. Yeah. I mean, I have so many friends who have like mentorship programs they've started and they, you know, just do speaking and they do. There's so much you can do with your degree. And so I don't think that feeling stuck and feeling hopeless is ever what people should do as a veterinarian. And a lot of it is having people around you that will love you no matter what, that will support you no matter what. And you definitely did that. Like you were like, you have to make a change. And I don't feel like ever really in my career have you said like, you need to do something different. Like you've just been super supportive. But in those moments when you've said like, this is not working, you need to do something different. You need to change.
I think I say that not knowing like, hey, you need to make this change or else. It's mm-hmm. more of, I knew you needed something to push, right? Mm-hmm. I think you already made your mind up. You already knew what you needed to do. You just needed somebody to kind of confirm that decision internally.
Yeah. And quitting a job that I had so much pride in and I felt like I don't know, I had so much worth of myself in there. That was a hard pill to swallow. But it taught me a lot about like where I place the worth that I have and how I define that and who defines that, right? So this is, I don't know, this is emotional to talk about and I knew that was going to happen. I don't know why I even put mascara on this morning, but I still take myself back to that moment when I tell that story, which means that when you have those moments in life, you need to pay attention to them. You need to do something different. Because if I had had too many more of those moments, it would have completely broke me.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your support and your love and your help through those times. We'll have to make a follow-up episode because a lot of people asked about the transition to small animal and how that was successful. So I think we'll make an episode in the future about just joining a practice as a new associate and ways to set yourself up for success and transition into a new job.
Like you said, I mean, it's a whole different conversation, but this was a true transition process. Like you just didn't like cut cold turkey and go straight into small animal medicine. It was, yes, a, you know, doing some relief work, you know, CEEs, that type of stuff to get kind of back in the flow of stuff.
Yeah, there's a fair amount that you have to do when you're changing complete species that you're treating. And even when I, you know, started doing emergency, I had to also see exotics in the ER. And that was also another new training process and trying to like reacquaint myself with things, and honestly really leaning on the support I had around me. So, which I do a lot in life. So hopefully that answers the question, Deaf Doctor. I appreciate you sending it in, and I'm always here for follow-up questions. But just remember, there's a place for everyone in this industry.
Don't feel stuck.
If you're not happy, you can find yours. Make sure that if you enjoyed this episode, you leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, and reach out to us on any of our social media platforms. It's at Questions with Crocker. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day, guys.